Welcome back to the audio version of the Self-Esteem Book. We now bring you part 5.
Chapter 14, Complete Your Past. Self-esteem starts with seeing things clearly. Building self-esteem comes from interpreting things to reflect an empowering truth. Now that you have practiced reinterpreting your past with an empathetic new perspective, it's time to work through and to put behind you any additional lingering issues that are draining your energy and sapping your self-esteem. Our lives are run by our incompletions. Unresolved experiences keep us from being fully present to life. When we are excessively preoccupied with our past mistakes, we trade our happiness, self-esteem, and power for this obsession. 80% of the process of reclaiming self-esteem involves putting the past behind us so that it no longer consumes our energy or our attention, and 20% entails designing our future. If negative self-defeating interpretations of past events consume your attention and have you feeling badly about yourself, you will magnify and spread this overwhelming negative energy countless times. Just as you have practiced reclaiming your self-esteem by reinterpreting your childhood upsets, you'll need to follow the same process of separating facts from interpretations on a daily basis every time that you encounter a new potential upset. By choosing to apply empowering meanings to each event, you'll keep your relationships whole and you'll build your self-image. As you go about your day, become proficient at recognizing the opportunity to manage your upsets. Release the emotions of anger, sadness, or fear as they surface, and reinterpret what happened to recreate your future and to reclaim your self-worth. It is impossible to live fully in the present, welcoming each new experience moment by moment, if the baggage of unresolved issues and perspectives hinders our thoughts. Each day presents us with a new opportunity to resolve unfinished business and communicate responsibly, thus bringing us pride and peace. Achieving completion means that there is nothing more that we feel compelled to say or do with respect to people or situations in our past. There are many means to accomplish this objective. Often, doing so involves nothing more than clarifying how our faulty misinterpretations about the past do not support our happiness and our excellence. When we can reinterpret past events, we're actually able to change history. The millions of memories that we have about what happened in the past string together to make our life story. Most of these memories were fraught with the distorted meanings that we gave to what happened. By altering our misinterpretations, our histories can also be altered. Incidents that may have plagued us for years can disappear as if they never occurred once the emotional charge is taken from them. Disarming these painful memories allows us to reclaim self-esteem sacrificed by faulty analysis. In some instances, we need to have a conversation with people from our past. Misunderstandings can be resolved by saying what seemed true for you without needing to blame or make the other person wrong. This can do wonders for putting the past behind you and for healing old wounds. Perhaps we may just need to say we're sorry for what transpired. Other situations may warrant that we forgive and that we tell the other person that we love them. Many times, completion can be achieved without reestablishing communication. There will be situations when reviving a relationship is undesirable. Perhaps it may be inappropriate or unwise to contact an ex-spouse or someone with a history of violence. Or perhaps we may wish to achieve completion with the deceased parent or family member. One way to do so is to write a letter to them that need not be mailed. In the letter, say everything that you need to say in order to be whole. Withhold nothing. You might say, "I'm angry because," "I am sad because," "I am sorry for." You might share your insights. Say anything and everything until you feel like you can't say anything more. When you feel the release of energy which accompanies completion, see if you can bring yourself to tell them that you love them and that you forgive them, or both. This doesn't mean that you condone their actions. You'll know when you're complete, as the need to change, fix, or worry about something in your past will have vanished. Here's an exercise to take on. Make a list of all the people involved in your unresolved past events. What interpretations do you need to resolve? Devise an individual plan for each one. Commit to doing whatever is appropriate to achieve completion within the next 30 days. Chapter 15, The Power of Forgiveness. Forgiveness paves the way for self-esteem to flourish. There is no more effective way to heal your past and encourage thriving relationships than by forgiving. It is critical that you begin this healing process by first forgiving yourself. As we discussed in Chapter 5, the interpretation of failure doesn't serve us. We're all human and we all make mistakes. The tragedy is not in making the mistake, but in not having learned from it. And it's never too late to learn. Part of the challenge is how we relate to mistakes and to problems. In our culture, we have determined that problems are bad and that we shouldn't make mistakes. With this limiting view, we give very little room to take chances, to aggressively pursue our dreams, and to honor our values. The concern of avoiding mistakes at all costs has us needlessly resign ourselves to a life that is less than ideal. If you can't afford to make a mistake, you won't have the freedom to grow and expand out of your comfort zone and achieve greatness. What if you adopted the perspective that everyone who lives makes mistakes, that the greatest mistake you can make is to have mistakes crush your spirit and steal your fervor for accessing the best that life has to offer? If we view mistakes as an essential component of our evolution, we will see that they actually support us to see things differently. As we continue to learn from them, our awareness increases and we're less likely to repeat these same mistakes. From this point of view, powerful people focus not on avoiding problems and mistakes, but on living their commitments instead. Embrace mistakes, learn from each one, and look forward to the insights and the gifts that are sure to come from experiencing future mistakes. By shifting our relationship to mistakes and overcoming our fear of avoiding problems, we can move on with our lives in a powerful manner. We can expect to make more mistakes, encounter more problems, and grow from each enriching experience. So acknowledge yourself today for having learned some extremely valuable lessons from your mistakes. We all do the best that we can to not only survive, but to actually thrive as we go about our daily lives. We instinctively seek pleasure and avoid pain. Based upon the limited perspective we have as imperfect creatures, we will err from time to time. Please don't misunderstand. I'm not condoning hurtful behavior. I'm simply suggesting compassion for our human weaknesses. Adopt the attitude that you will continue to make mistakes until the day that you draw your last breath. In the grand scheme of things, everything is important and nothing matters so much that we should choose the alternative to risking. This option is the death of our spirits and the resignation that comes with living in fear and playing not to lose instead of to win. We are often our own harshest critics. When we judge ourselves to be bad and unworthy of love and life's greatest pleasures, we manifest a negative destructive energy that ensures that this be so. Our self-esteem suffers to the extent that we maintain our right to punish ourselves for past weaknesses and past mistakes. We attract the negative energy we put out into the world. By failing to forgive ourselves, we block the loving energy that cleanses our souls and allows us to share our greatest gift with others, and that's the gift of being the best that we can be. By stubbornly keeping in place our critical self-judgments and the self-anger that accompanies these judgments, we avoid responsibility for making our relationships stronger and our lives work more advantageously. Doing so allows us to shirk responsibility for communication. We stay angry with ourselves, and we keep active an unhealthy level of self-pity for our faults. This distracts us from getting on with our lives and for cleaning up our mess. It's a lot more difficult to forgive and to give up being a victim. Forgiving enables us to actively get about the business of making our lives and our relationships flourish rather than keep alive the downward spiral of self-incrimination and blaming others. Making mistakes is part of the human condition. It has nothing to do with our worthiness as a person. It also has no bearing on the healthy, unconditional self-acceptance essential to high self-esteem. Taking responsibility means committing to no longer act in a manner consistent with past mistakes, but to learn from each one instead. We hate those things about others that we hate most about ourselves. Forgiving ourselves is the first step in clearing the way to forgive others. By forgiving others, the toxic resentment that consumes your spirit and destroys your self-esteem will give way to the self-love that fosters forgiving and for loving others. Waiting for others to initiate reconciliation will not support your relationships, your health, or your self-image. Healing your past will come from the empathy that you initiate by putting yourself in the other person's world and understanding why he may have acted as he did. By being the first to forgive others, you pave a new road to a future based upon love rather than anger. Remember that anger results from our interpretations about what was done, not from the actions themselves. Forgiving will make you the champion and designer of your future self, a self that you can feel good about. There may be some people who you have hurt or wronged. Look to see if there is anything that you can do to make amends for hurting them with your past behavior. Clean up misspoken words. Acknowledge your mistakes. Acknowledge the casual promises that you blew off as being unimportant. Offer sincere apology if you've erred, and commit to make things right and repair the damaged relationship if at all possible. Your reparation should be appropriate for the damage that you caused and directed to the person that was harmed. When you actively accept responsibility for your part in failed communication or a wounded relationship, you act with the courage to make things right. This commitment blazes a trail to a new way of being. When you apologize for past mistakes and take appropriate action to clean up the mess created, you take responsibility for your part by giving a 100% effort toward healing the relationship. However the other person chooses to respond, take comfort in knowing that you've done whatever you could do to repair the harm. It will support you to be committed to healing the relationship without an attachment to having the other person respond in kind. By showing a willingness to repair the situation to the best of your ability, you will have done your part to initiate a healing of the relationship. Keep the door open to communication. Congratulate yourself for courageously taking action in the direction of completion, and get on with your life. When you have done everything you can to right a past indiscretion, it will not support you to continue to berate yourself about what you've done. We all make mistakes. All we can ask of ourselves is to continue to learn from our actions, commit to honoring others, to take responsibility for being the person we declare ourselves to be. Again, this does not excuse hurtful or wrongful action. It simply means acting from love once you see that you have caused another pain or loss. With this foundation of love, you free yourself to declare who you are to the world. Resentment no longer dictates your reactions. The attachment to making yourself right and others wrong will fade, and a commitment to deliberately designing the person you are will be possible. Miracles will manifest, and your self-image will soar. Here's another exercise. List all of the items that you have not yet forgiven yourself for. List all of the items that you have not yet forgiven others for. Create a plan to clean up any misspoken words, to acknowledge your mistakes, and to apologize for any errors that you may have made. For those deceased or those you can't or choose not to achieve completion with in person, write a letter expressing your thoughts, emotions, and forgiveness. Mailing the letter is optional. Chapter 16, The Importance of Gratitude. A wise man once said, "I felt bad about not having new shoes till I saw the person who didn't have any feet." So we've realized that the faulty interpretations that we give to what happens to us in life damage our self-esteem and inhibit our magnificence. We take what someone says or does and almost automatically put a negative spin on it. We interpret comments and events as being aimed at us personally and to mean that we're less worthy and not good enough to deserve the best that life has to offer. Rather than dwelling on thoughts that champion our excellence or support our happiness, we accept the denigrating message, sometimes internally from Chip, sometimes from others, that we lack what it takes to be successful, prosperous, joyful, involved in rewarding relationships, and proud of who we are. As a result, we feel sorry for ourselves. We can shift our attention from this quagmire of self-pity, partly by gratefully focusing on our blessings. Gratitude helps us concentrate on our strengths rather than our weaknesses, so that we can make the most of our gifts that we are blessed with. Why waste time accentuating our flaws? When we see the world through grateful eyes, we can direct our attention toward contributing to others, toward expanding our horizons, and toward taking profitable risks, as opposed to wallowing in self-pity and shrinking from fully realizing our potential. Grateful people live optimistically. Their glasses are always half full, not half empty. And they're not afraid to keep drinking because they know the glass will be filled again and again. They make the most of what they've been given. They've decided to be excellent persons and take responsibility for developing any missing areas that would contribute to this excellence. Having gratitude takes the focus off of oneself. It creates an ever-replenishing wellspring of positive energy that allows one to contribute to others. This continual commitment to contribution nurtures self-esteem. It is difficult to feel bad about yourself when you surround yourself with people who are grateful for your contribution to them. If you find yourself surrounded by cynical, negative people who tend to erode your self-esteem, commit to widening your circle of friends and contacts to include people who appreciate your company and value your contribution that you make to their lives just by being you. Decide now to spend more time with people who nurture your essential self by treating you as a worthy friend and equal. As you become more in touch with your gifts and further develop your interests, seek out individuals who share these interests and appreciate your value. Don't fall into the trap of minimizing your value to others. Seek out opportunities to contribute to them. No contribution is too small. Even a kind word or a friendly smile can brighten someone's day. As you develop the gift of friendship, you and they will grow in gratitude for the blessings you bring to each of their lives. Similarly, open yourself up to contributions from others. We can't fully give of ourselves if we're reluctant to receive from others as well. Allow people to experience the gift of contributing to you. Acknowledge their generosity and gladly welcome the value that they've shared with you. Notice how allowing them to support you in some way has given them the gift of self-esteem as well. Daily practice giving and receiving gratitude at every possible opportunity. The more you become consciously aware of the many people and things that you have in your life for which you can be grateful, the easier it will be to feel an ever-expanding sense of gratitude and worthiness. Here's an exercise. Decide now to be grateful. Make a list of all of the reasons you have to be grateful. Before going to bed each night, record these blessings for which you have decided to be grateful. List at least 5. Daily decide to contribute to someone who might benefit from your support. Each day, acknowledge yourself and your value for your contribution to someone else. Don't dismiss anything as being too small. Recall the people who have contributed to you or supported you today and plan to acknowledge them with gratitude. Section 2. Assess your present. Chapter 17. Do a values inventory. Responsibility starts with a commitment to honor your values. Let's begin our assessment of your level of emotional fulfillment by discussing the concept of values. It's helpful for us to speak in terms of 3 types of values. These are key values, obligatory values, and up-and-coming values. The failure to honor your own most important or key values perpetuates low self-esteem. These values make up the essence of who we are. When we live in harmony with them, we nurture our spirits and we elevate our own high regard. Key values exist at the very center of our being. When they're violated, life becomes a struggle. When they're dishonored, we become angry, our communication breaks down, and our relationships suffer. We feel resentful toward others and bad about ourselves. When we honor these key values, we're most happy and life is most meaningful. Clarifying what our key values are supports us in directing our lives toward their pursuit. By recognizing your most important values, you can design your actions to be consistent with their realization. Look at some examples of the many key values that form the foundation for self-esteem. Some of these include safety, happiness, belonging, freedom, intimacy, communication, acceptance, love, purity, peace, adventure, integrity, or respect. Consider now the following questions. Which of your key values do you feel you cannot happily live without? Which values are not being fully honored right now? How does this affect your vitality and your self-image? What will you put into place within the next 30 days to begin to honor these essential components that nourish your spirit? Name 3 people that you'll ask to support you in honoring these most important values. And what specific actions will you immediately take toward this goal? Let's turn our attention now to the concept of obligatory values. These values are not really your own, but they're forced upon you by others. We can refer to these as shoulds. Society, your friends, your family, or others who believe that they know how you should act impose obligatory values upon you. These shoulds go against your wishes, your goals, and your desires. They do not support you to make your own decisions that contribute to your happiness. They're based upon standards that others have set regarding what's right and wrong, or rules of acceptable behavior. You unwillingly follow such values because you feel that you're forced or coerced into doing so. Any place that you find yourself with a should is a place that you will find yourself suffering. This is not to say that the principles behind these forced values are not necessarily worthwhile or possessing merit. However, if you did not have guilt or fear some negative result or retribution, you would not choose to pursue these values on your own. Obligatory values do not empower or contribute to your happiness as key values do. There will be times when they support your goals or your intentions, and other times when the more positive outcomes that accompany violating them outweigh the negative consequences of blindly obeying them. An example might be the statement, "You should never tell a lie." There will be many times when this principle will serve you well. But what if telling a lie is necessary to protect a loved one or to keep a pleasant surprise from being leaked out? The inherent problem with obligatory values is that they lack the flexibility necessary to make life work optimally at all times. Growing up a Catholic in the 50s and the 60s meant complying with the obligatory value, "You shouldn't eat meat on Friday." The reasoning behind this rule involved the value of sacrificing for a higher good. However, as a six-year-old, I clearly recall being faced with the dilemma of an aunt buying me a hot dog for my lunch on Friday. Knowing that it also had been stressed that it's a sin to waste food, I was faced with a lose-lose options of either eating meat on Friday or wasting food and going hungry. No matter which decision I made, it carried the consequences of doing something wrong and being bad. This is one problem with obligatory values. They don't empower happiness or allow for flexibility and judgment regarding what serves the person best in a particular situation. Now, don't confuse obligatory values with a moral code. We are not saying that these behaviors are bad or encouraging situational ethics. In fact, many of the following concepts are founded upon sound principles and often conveyed with good intentions. The underlying value may not be at fault so much as the overwhelming sense of obligation that was used to inculcate it. If the value is not your own value, but one that has been dictated to you by another, it is defined as an obligatory value. Here are some of the typical obligatory values you may have experienced growing up. Cleanliness. You should clean up your room and do your chores. Cleanliness is next to godliness. You shouldn't get dirty while playing. Scarcity. Don't be wasteful. Money doesn't grow on trees. Eat all the food on your plate. People are starving in Africa. Shut off the lights. Do you think that I own shares in the electric company? Obligation. You should visit your elderly relatives. You will go to medical school and become a doctor. That's not how a good wife, husband, child, or parent acts. You should go to church every Sunday. Marriage should be forever. You shouldn't get divorced. You should provide for your family the same way that I provided for you. Respect. Respect your elders no matter what they say. Children should be seen and not heard. A promise is a promise, should never be broken. Married people shouldn't act that way. Goodness. Good boys and girls do what they're told. Ladies don't speak that way to others. Good parents love all their children alike. Fat people aren't attractive. Generosity. Good children share their toys. You should give a percentage of your income to charity. You should volunteer your time. You should think of others before yourself. Proper actions. Grown men don't cry or show their emotions. That's not very ladylike. Stop being sad. Idleness is the devil's workshop. You should be busy. Hard work never hurt anyone. Worthiness. If you were more of this quality, you wouldn't have that problem. You should only marry a doctor. You should only marry someone from your same race and religion. You should know the answer. You should be successful. When you were a child, society and your parents instilled within you many of these obligatory values. They said or implied that you were good when you followed the rules and bad when you broke them. They collapse the moral interpretations of good and bad with guidelines meant to support you in making your life work. Their intentions were honorable. They wanted you to learn the tools that you would need to live a productive, successful, and structured life. However, the consequences of breaking the rules were, all too often, the interpretation that you were bad. What was set up to support your life to be productive, effective, and happy produced the exact opposite result. It diminished your self-esteem a little bit more each time that you failed to live up to the restricted expectations that were imposed by others. You may have followed the same pattern and distilled many of these shoulds into your own children. Despite the best of intentions, these forced values can result in the decision that I am bad because I have not followed the rules. People use force, coercion, and intimidation to keep obligatory values in place. Obligatory values can dominate us and rob us of our free will because of the inflexibility with which they are often presented. We resent the pressure to conform. We also feel guilt if we violate them. Our self-esteem suffers either way. Take a few moments now and reflect upon the following questions. What obligatory values did you grow up with? Which ones are still in place today? Where do you feel guilty or torn between what you should do and what you want to do? How do these forced values erode your self-esteem? Create an empowering interpretation to explain why others may have pushed each of these values upon you. Which obligatory values will you discard as no longer serving your happiness and the person that you've decided to be? Which ones support your self-image and serve you to keep in place? Create a new interpretation to replace any previous ones that had you labeled as bad or wrong if you fail to comply with these values. Remind yourself of this new interpretation each time you judge yourself harshly for violating this obligatory value. What do you need to put into place to eliminate unwanted obligations that damage your self-esteem? By what date will you take these actions? Record your insights in your journal. Many times our inner struggle stems from the conflict between what we want to do and what we should do if we were good or responsible. We live in a state of either or. Either we can do our homework or we can go outside and play. Either we can watch the game or we can spend time with the kids. Either we can work hard or we can take the day off. What we often miss is the possibility of doing both. If we can train ourselves to look outside the box and consider and in both as a possible solution to our dilemma instead of either or, we now can have the best of both worlds. Decide today to honor your own values and exercise your right to choose your actions. Of course, all actions bring with them consequences. Be clear about what the short and the long-term consequences are of rejecting any obligatory values. What we resist, we also keep in place. Decide to accept full responsibility for all of your choices. Let's now discuss the concept of up-and-coming values. Like the layers of an onion, as certain basic values become honored, other values show up as important and beg to be honored. We all need a reserve to protect us from the chaos and the stresses of life. Without such a reserve, our daily preoccupations are spent in an effort to survive and to fight off threats. For example, to a homeless person, key values might be safety and security. Until these are honored, up-and-coming values such as creativity, adventure, wealth, and other values not essential for survival can't even be considered. The same concept applies to those lacking self-esteem. As we grow in self-esteem, we see new and exciting possibilities opening up for our lives. It's as though we are riding up a tall skyscraper in a glass elevator, with each floor representing a higher degree of self-esteem. When we're at ground level, all we can see as we look outside the elevator window is the brick wall in front of us. As our self-esteem grows, so does our perspective with respect to our up-and-coming values. The higher the elevator climbs, the more expansive our vista becomes, and the more beautiful the world around us appears. As our self-image soars to the height of the penthouse suite, we can hardly believe that our ability to see clearly was once so restricted. As your self-esteem grows in the coming months and years, take time to reflect upon the new up-and-coming values that you will find waiting to be honored as your life enriches.
Thanks for listening. This concludes this part of the Self-Esteem Book. Please continue with Part 6.